We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and tonight I want us to discuss dynamics of time, of emotion. We have this perspective that we think we are always nice people, and we expect other people to always be nice people. And if we stand in line and the guy behind the counter is uptight with us, so we feel bad, like, why is he uptight with us? What did I do to him? And sometimes we'll even tell ourselves, maybe I won't go to this place again. Maybe I won't use this teller, this store, this professional again. Yet, if we were honest with ourselves, there are definitely moments in everyone's lives. There are definitely times and periods of time which make us more uptight, which put us on edge. If you're on your way to a root canal that the dentist told you might end up being a full-fledged operation, that you might lose the tooth and have to have an implant, and it might cost you 35,000 shekel, you might feel a little different. If you just walked on your way up to shul and you saw that your neighbor's kid had taken a baseball bat and bashed all the windows out of your car, you're still going to daven. But you might be in a little bit different mood when someone approaches you and says, hey, you want to give a donation to the shul, right? You might just be in a different mood. So we are also affected by things that happen in our lives. And sometimes we have a hard time in a relationship factoring that in. And I'll give a few examples. I want to begin with a very harsh example that men don't take seriously. A woman is expecting her period. Okay? So her period is supposed to come on Sunday, and it doesn't come. And Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and her period doesn't come. So she does a pregnancy test, and her period didn't come, so she thinks she's pregnant. She discovers she's pregnant. She's jubilant. She is actually 4 days pregnant, or 6 days pregnant, or 8 days pregnant. And an hour later, she starts to bleed. Now, had she not done the pregnancy test, she would have thought her period was 4 days late. But now that she did the pregnancy test, that period becomes a miscarriage. So what does the average man do? He tries to explain to his wife, you see that seed of sugar? That's the size the baby was. It's not really a miscarriage. We happened to find out that you were pregnant, but you were all of 6 days pregnant, 8 days pregnant. Had we not done the pregnancy test, we would have thought it's your regular period. Pause. This is something which men don't connect to. We have to respect that that's the way it is. When a woman discovers she's pregnant, she undergoes a change. In her mind, there's a baby inside there. Now, you can explain to her the science of it a million ways. It doesn't matter. And when that pregnancy ends, even though it only lasted 4 hours, in her knowledge, to her, she has to mourn. And she's devastated. And the guy doesn't get that. And I'll tell you, if the statistic is that 1 in 4 pregnancies end in a miscarriage, meaning the average woman in her lifetime will have at least 1 miscarriage. But women take it very harshly. Men, even if it is in the 2nd month, in the 3rd month, whenever it is, so men will have a period when they're sad, and then they move on in life. But women can carry that with them their whole life. But statistically, every woman's going to undergo this, right? Right. We go through it differently. Men and women, different women, but we go through it differently. And there are many things that happen in life that men experience differently than women. Part of building a relationship is being able to respect the feelings of the other person, even though I don't begin to understand them. We don't understand women. After all this class, you can do the whole course, and we still don't know. We're different than them. But we have to respect even what we don't understand. And that means that sometimes emotions can run high, and we don't understand what they're getting all emotional about. And it's true, we don't understand, but that doesn't mean we can't give room for it. So let's take an example. You made yourself a cup of coffee before going to shul Friday afternoon. And a little bit of milk dripped on the counter. And your wife went ballistic. And you said, honey, I'll clean it up. I didn't know, you know. And she's like, sure, you'll clean it up. Great. And what about, wait, what did I do? So I dropped a little bit of milk. I'm going to clean it. Why is she all uptight? She's all uptight because there are a million other things that are on her to-do list on Friday afternoon. She's not sure she's going to get them done. Chazal tell us that Rabbi Meir, gave a halachic ruling, and then they came to him in a dream, and they told him he made a mistake, and then he didn't change his halachic ruling. He told the rabbis in the Beis Medrash, you know, I had this dream, but I'm right. And he stuck to his halachic ruling. And that was the greatness of Rabbi Meir. If he figured out that he was right, then dreams don't change that. That's what the halacha says. You have a dream, halacha, you have a dream, and in your dream they tell you, go into your front yard, dig, you know, go 10 steps forward from your front door, 3 steps to the right, dig 10 feet deep, you'll find the treasure chest. That treasure chest, you're going to find $10,100 bills, $5,005 bills, another $10,001 bills. The $1 bills belong to charity. The other bills are yours. You go into your yard, you go straight 10 steps, you go right 3 steps, you dig 10 feet down, you find the chest. They're exactly the number of bills they told you. What does the halacha say? It's all yours. It's all yours. That's what the halacha says. You don't believe dreams. Look at that. Isn't that amazing? That's what it says. But they told you in the dream it would be there. And if not for the dream, you wouldn't have found it. And in the dream, they told you that the $1 bills belong to charity. What do we say? We don't believe dreams. What do you mean you don't believe dreams? But you dug, you found the chest. Okay, be a good Jew and give charity. But does it belong to charity because of a dream? No. You'll be a good Jew. You'll give charity. But can you say, because in my dream they told me this, it now belongs to someone else? So Rabbi Meir has this dream and he doesn't do it. By the way, the flip side of the story. A guy once came to the Brisker Rav. And he said, I have to go on a business trip by ship. And I keep having this dream that I'm going to die on this ship trip. Should I go or not? And the Brisker Rav said, we don't decide based on dreams. There's no logical reason you shouldn't go on the trip. You can go on the trip. And the guy went on the trip and the ship sank and the guy died. That's another interesting story. So you can decide what you want to do with these stories. But bottom line, Rabbi Meir said, this is my halachic ruling. I have all the logical backing to it. And a dream won't make me change my halachic ruling. The Gemara then gives us a second story. Right? Follow up to that story. Rabbi Meir, we don't have time. Rabbi Meir had neighbors that would fight every Friday afternoon. And Rabbi Meir went to their house on Friday afternoon to be with them. And when he was there, so the Sutton didn't dare walk into their house, and they made peace. 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And after the 3rd week, you suddenly heard Sutton outside going, oh, shucks, Rabbi Meir kicked me out of their house. So the commentaries say, the two stories tell us that Rabbi Meir was so fearless. That Rabbi Meir, just like he wouldn't budge because of a dream, he wouldn't budge because the Satan was a steady visitor in that home every Friday. He said, we're going to keep the peace in this home. But maybe we in our own lives have to take a step back and say, if Rabbi Meir were standing here, how would I behave? When Rabbi Meir was in their home, they behaved differently, right? The Gemara calls it the Satan couldn't come into the house. Very often, there's the famous story about the guy who was yelling at his wife, suddenly sees his Rebbe standing there. He says, Rebbe, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were here. And the Rebbe goes, doesn't matter that I was here, it matters that your wife was here. Right? Number one, we have to respect that times cause different pressures. And it can be the time of the month, certain times before and during the beginning of a woman's period, a woman can be more emotional. It can be because of other things in her lifetime. Could be because a person's parent is ill. Could be because a child is ill. It could be because a person didn't get adequate sleep. So even though we don't understand, and even though we don't experience what our spouses experience, part of what we have to factor in a relationship is that I don't understand it, but I respect it. I give space where my partner needs space. And this is counterintuitive. Because as I began with, we tend to think of ourselves as being, I wouldn't use the word stoic, but not far from it. We like to think that we are very consistent and logical and that we're always nice guys. But the truth is that when we're affected by things that actually touch our emotions, then we will find ourselves not to be so calm and consistent. And so even if we think we are, we have to give space to our spouses when they aren't. And that's part of what we rely on one another in a marriage. That when things are going to be difficult, And when people undergo difficult times, so usually your thought is, if I'm having a tough time, my spouse will give me space. My spouse will be there for me. What does that mean, give me space? That means that if the space I need is that my fuse is shorter, I'm more emotional, so give me that space. This sounds obvious. It's not obvious. It sounds easy. It's not easy. Part of what we have to remind ourselves, which goes into the class of how women speak, is that women don't express themselves the same way as men. So if a woman says, I can't stand Shabbos, is she saying, I can't stand Shabbos? Or is she saying, I can't stand the pressure leading into Shabbos? The night a woman goes to mikveh is very often, there's a biblical mitzvah for the couple to be intimate. Yet many women go to mikveh crying, and many women will say, I hate the night I go to mikveh. Why do you hate it? Well, there's a lot of pressure. She has to fit something else into her schedule. She has to get herself ready. So the husband is devastated to hear that. Instead of thinking, she's undergoing a lot of pressure, I have to think how to be there for her. The husband says, you hate Shabbos? How could you say that? Who, you want our kids to hear you hate Shabbos? So he has all the logical reasons, but is he there for her when she's having her hardship? On a different occasion, they might discuss, is it right to say such a sentence in front of the kids? Is it right to say such a sentence, period? But our job within a marriage is to understand that what's being expressed is frustration, difficulty, hardship, and we have to figure out how to be there for the other party. It's not as easy as it sounds, because our natural reaction is, you don't mean you hate Shabbos. Yeah. What is it that's bothering you? That's not necessarily what she wants right now. To be continued.